Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
104.5 The Zone with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
This is the Midday 1-8.
Served up by Wendy's on 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. We're about to be joined by John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. He's covered the league since 77. He's seen a lot of week ones. We'll get his assessment on what he learned from week one and what he's learned not to really buy into after 1 week of the regular season.
And I texted him yesterday about the new Titans tight end. The Titans did what you would expect. They went and got a practice squad tight end from somewhere to put on their roster. It's a guy, Pettis, who Vrabel saw daily go against his defense in Houston. So we'll get John's thoughts. He didn't have a heck of a lot. I wouldn't have a heck of a lot if the Texans signed a practice squatter from here either. But that's the move the Titans made, and that's the place probably you had to turn.
Phone lines are open. Load them up for John McClain. So much to talk about after week one across the NFL. Phone lines are open. 615-737-1045, 737-1045.
John, how are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you?
We are excellent, and we are ready for week two with the matchup. Two 0-1 teams, and we mentioned while a lot of things you can look at and assess with week one, a lot of things you can't carry over for the rest of the season. We'll learn a lot about the rest of the league from what happens in week two and specifically what happens in Nashville between Tennessee and Houston.
Did you guys really stay on the air the whole time?
Yes, we did.
We did. They're insane.
Y'all ought to win some kind of award. That's got to be a record. I hope that the listeners appreciate what would go into that. That's just unbelievable.
We're on the air for over 8 hours. The game itself was over seven, and we had that 1 hour pregame from the booth. We never went to any other programming. We stayed live from the stadium.
John, I was part of a good 3.5 or 4 minutes of that, and I accept your congratulations.
I'm sure those overtime checks will be in the mail.
Paul went down and met some of the readers from PaulKuharski.com and also interviewed some of the beer vendors who I don't think ran out.
Yeah. Well, the big thing is that second delay is still in beer sale territory. They did close a lot of concessions, though, because they didn't want to pay overtime to people. But I interviewed one woman about beer sales, which she said were very strong. And I interviewed another woman about if she was getting overtime or not, and she said, I sure hope so.
That was amazing. I was watching it from afar in New England, and I couldn't believe it. Just couldn't believe it. It's unprecedented, and I hope you guys get a lot of kudos for what y'all did.
Deshaun Watson was very self-critical of a bad opening performance. What are you expecting from a bounce back, and how bad might that be for the Titans if he is more the guy they saw from last year?
I can't remember if I said this to you guys. I told everybody on talk shows last week, and I wrote it, tweeted it. It wouldn't surprise me if he didn't get off to a slow start. And the reason had nothing to do with New England, where he played great last year. But last year, he had participated in the entire offseason program after being the number one pick. He had played in the preseason. He had joint practices against the Patriots. He came off the bench in the second half in the opener. Then he started the second game and wasn't very good, but they won in Cincinnati. So when he went to New England in the third game, he had so much more playing in practice time than he did in this one, so it didn't surprise me. And he should have been self-critical, but I tell you what, his offensive line with four new starters, and then they lost their right tackle, Chantrell Henderson, for the season right off the bat. right tackle who's starting the left tackle. Julian Davenport starting for the first time, moved to right tackle. Rookie Martinez Rankin, who was a third-round pick and had missed 3 months after surgery, he played left tackle. And they're not looking for sympathy based on what's happened to the Titans with their tackles. But when you not play together, there's going to be some problems. They were better in the second half. Watson held the ball too long. He was way indecisive, which is something that he didn't have last year. And everybody knows what the problem is, but they better get it fixed fast. Now, last time the Titans saw him, he put up 57 points with 5 touchdowns, counting 2 rushing. So he's going to have to bounce back quick to be that good.
How was the receiving core in this game for Houston?
Well, Will Fuller did not play against the Patriots. He will play against the Titans. He played against them last year. When Fuller and Hopkins played 4 games with Watson last year, they averaged 40.5 points. Fuller had 13 catches, 7 for touchdowns, and averaged 28 yards. So having him at his speed opposite DeAndre Hopkins affects the game plan. Mike Vrabel knows him very well. He's seen him in practice, seen him in games. Problems with Fuller has been staying healthy. Of course, he beat the Titans 2 years ago with a punt return for a touchdown. That's not why they lost New England, but having him back at receiver will help them a lot. They're in good shape, except they lost their right tackle, and they lost their starting corner, Kevin Johnson, with a second concussion. And let me tell you, he wasn't playing very well before he suffered that concussion. He won't be back for I think, till the second half of the season.
John, what did New England do well, aside from just having Tom Brady at the line, to keep Jadeveon Clowney from doing anything in this game and to quiet Watt for most of the game?
Yeah, Whitney Merciless didn't do anything. But again, I go back, Merciless and Watt have been out since the 5th game of last year. Clowney did not do anything in off-season program. He had 3 snaps in preseason, and all of them looked like guys who were coming off injuries and had no practice time and no PT until right before the regular season opener. Clowney was really hard on himself. Watt was encouraged by the second half, and the only pass rush they got was in the second half between Watt and nose tackle DJ Reader, who had 2 sacks. And they're only 2 sacks and 3 hits on the quarterback. So they got to be better in this game because they can't be much worse.
John McLean is with us here on the Midday 180.
We've been talking today about 7 new coaches all losing. You know, not everybody inherited a great team, but, I mean, Mike Vrabel did. Not all these teams are terrible. Do you think there's anything noteworthy about that that says anything about teams installing new stuff, or you think it's coincidence?
I think that has a lot to do with it, based on what I've heard from you guys and read, and that the Titans offense has struggled from the get-go, and now Mariota was not playing well till he was hurt. Now, even if he plays, he's going to have a sore throwing elbow. But the worst of those 07 coaches, one of them, Matt Patricia, took over for a coach who also was fired after a 9-7 season, and he turned in the worst job. I mean, the Lions could not have been more pathetic against a rookie quarterback, and he's supposed to be a defensive genius. And I thought of all the new coaches, the one who turned in the best performance was Mike Nagy with the Bears, who went right to the end before the Aaron Rodgers miracle to pull that one out at Lambeau Field. And then, of course, last night, I don't know if this was a joke or not. They just told me on my show in Houston, this has got to be a joke, that at his post-game news conference that Gruden said, we got to figure out a way to rush the quarterback better. Yeah. He didn't really say that, did he?
I hope he didn't, but it's the truth.
I think they win that game with Khalil Mack.
Well, they may have, but right now, Gruden, they got booed off the field in Oakland.
Your Rams pick looks pretty good. They're a good... That's a good football team. Entertaining, too.
Yes.
Good for the league that they're good, because that's a team I would go out of my way to watch.
The first half, they were looked like a team where that nobody played on the starters in the first half at the skill position and 2 linemen. Then they put it together. And Sean McVay is just a fun coach to watch. You know, he's creative. He does things that are surprising, and they work because they're loaded with talent. And Wade Phillips, of course, great defensive coordinator. I feel good about that pick. Looking at the NFC West, San Francisco loses. Arizona gets stomped at home by the Washington. And then Seattle loses at Denver. That game, that race may be over by Thanksgiving.
John, your thoughts on just last night's game, specifically Sam Darnold. He throws a pick six on his first pass, and then goes on to play a decent game. And how about the Jets defense, who apparently knew the play calls when going against Detroit?
Like Brett Favre, who did the same thing when he made his debut, didn't seem to bother Sam Darnold very much. And Darnold, by all accounts, is a really good kid, and people should be happy for his success. Now, as far as the Jets' defense, if I'm a defensive player and I know what's coming from the offense, instead of telling the media, I'm calling the next opponent and saying, hey, dude, how much would you pay me for the signals? And seeing if they stick to that. That is one of the most embarrassing things you can do by the staff, is when teams say they know what's coming. And it's one reason the Lions did the worst coaching job in the NFL last night. And it's such a waste, because right next door, Justin Verlander, the Astros pitcher, was at Comerica Park with his first game in Detroit. They had only 19,000 fans there because the Lions were making their debuting on Monday Night Football, because Verlander, it was incredible watching the standing ovations he got when he came out, the tribute on the video boards when they pulled him, standing ovation. And I told people I thought if the Lions had not been playing, they might have drawn 30,000-35,000 to see his return. But that was the only highlight they had, and I don't even know if that's a highlight because he beat the Tigers. But it's a shame, really, for Lions fans, and I know a couple who are just devastated today because they expected so much more from Matt Patricia.
John, what'd you make of Andrew Luck's return on Sunday? And are we maybe not criticizing Luck enough for re-injuring his arm snowboarding?
Well, he claimed that that had nothing to do with a labrum surgery. I don't know if it did or it didn't. But the fact is, he threw 53 passes and completed a team record. Well, not, I don't know if it's a team record, a career high, 39. I did not see that game, but they told me that Frank Reich had designed some pretty weird, I don't know if it was formations or players starting off in the backfield and then spreading out. And they jumped to a lead. They led midway through the third quarter, and then Andy Dalton brought back a furious rally for the Bengals. But I know for every Colts fan, they were just glad to see Luck drop back, get hit. He ran. It was almost like old times for him, and we have seen him enough to know, Chad, he's going to get better and better as long as he's healthy.
And to think that he was leading them on a game-winning drive when they had the fumble that was returned 83 yards for the touchdown by Fegelum in that game.
They're going to play a role in seeing who wins the AFC South. And if my prediction before the season of the Jaguars, Texans and Titans all going to the playoffs, if that's going to bear out.
To the phones, and we go to Brian to lead us off today with John McClain. Hey, Brian.
Hey, boys, what's happening? First of all, John, I'm glad you're on the road to recovery. And
Thank you very much. The
Aaron Rodgers thing is not a miracle. That's just being a Bears fan. You know, at some point it's coming. We go from Don Magic Man Mikowski to Brett Favre, so now Aaron Rodgers. This is just the plight that we have to bear. You know, I hear Jets fans complaining about Brady, but try like 20 or 30 years of this. But, John, it kind of goes along to what I called in about. You know, Matt Nagy did a great job of play calling that first half, and he made very few mistakes in play calling, but there was a couple of instances that I noticed where he was, him and his team was quick to call a timeout. When I've never really understood the mindset. What do you think is the reasoning why coaches value yardage more than they do timeouts, because it seems to me, unless you're in field goal range, to take a 5-yard penalty is more, you can overcome that as opposed to getting, giving up all your timeouts and when you actually need them towards the end of the game like the Bears did. That's all I got, man. I'll be good.
That is a great point. I've often wondered that so many times the clock's expiring, call a timeout when they need that timeout later in the half or at the end of the game. I agree. Today, when they're throwing the ball like crazy and there's so much talent at the skill position, you should be able to make up 5 yards in a hurry. I could see it in earlier times in the NFL when it was more conservative and there were not all the great skill position players with so much speed, so many innovative formations. But I'll say this about the Bears. They couldn't have played any better at Lambeau Field. And I thought that now you got conservative in the second half, but coaches always do that with leads. It's almost a cliche about putting your foot on the throat and going for it. And he is, he's not different than most ever coaches. But based on what I saw from that defense and Khalil Mack and some of the really good players, the Bears are got a good thing going, probably be next year. If Fuller had just caught that interception, they would have won that game. But that's what happens to the Bears at Lambeau Field.
Jay is next to discuss Big D. What's up, Jay? Jay. Jay's not there. Jay waited over 8 minutes to talk with John McClain and then choked.
Chickened out.
Let's go to Corey.
Good, I didn't want to talk about diarrhea anyway.
What's up, Corey?
Hey, guys. All right, so, John, I got a quick question for you. After watching Atlanta's offense on Thursday, what do you think as far as Steve Sarkisian goes? If he continues to have poor performances, is he going to be out of Atlanta soon, or was this more on Matt Ryan?
I would like to know behind the scenes when they got together and they went over the game tape, if it indeed was the calls or Ryan. I know this, when you're paying Matt Ryan all that money, he's got to be better in the red zone. When you've got Julio Jones, you don't just, you know he's going to be double covered. If he's not double covered, of course you throw him a fade route, quick slant, whatever you can. But they look to me, when Ryan got the ball, he was indecisive, or everybody was covered. He's got multiple weapons. He's got two running backs. He has a decent tight end. It's inexcusable for them to be that bad. And sometimes you got to blame the players. Everybody wants to blame Steve Sarkisian. Maybe he deserves it, but I tell you what, Matt Ryan ought to be better than that.
I think he deserves it, though, and I think this illustrates something we don't talk enough about, really, because we talk a lot about how few good quarterbacks there is and how hard it is to find a good one. But we don't spend a lot of time talking about how hard it is to find that coordinator. And Atlanta had that coordinator in Shanahan, and I think Atlanta's window is shutting because it doesn't have a coordinator like Shanahan. And if you have a good offensive coordinator, where's he going? He's going to be a head coach pretty soon. So, you know, Atlanta didn't necessarily have somebody ready to take over. I would offer this, and I know people are going to laugh because Titans started poorly, but if Matt LaFleur has a good year here, I don't know if we talked about this on the air or not. If Matt LaFleur has a good year here and he's a head coaching candidate after this season, the Titans are going to be in a spot like this where you've got to settle for somebody like Steve Sarkisian because there isn't another LaFleur guy out. And if there is another LaFleur guy, guess where he's going? With LaFleur or with McVay or with Shanahan. As those guys spread out, they're going to have all their people until they're head coaching candidates.
That's why you better have a good guy who you're grooming. And if the new coach wants to take him, you say, sorry.
I don't know who that guy is here. I mean, O'Hara's the second biggest hands-on guy in the offense. And it doesn't strike me as being groomed to be a coordinator. It's early, obviously, but I think it's a hard thing to do in your first year.
Let's go to Cody next up. Hey, Cody, thanks for waiting.
Hey, how you doing? A couple quick questions. Do you look for the Titans and the coaching staff to regroup and get it together this next week, or do you think we're going to take a step backwards? And also, I think it'd probably be a good idea to maybe start looking at other quarterbacks. I think I'm listening. Thanks.
Well, first of all, you cannot ignore injury situation that the Titans have had on both sides of the ball, not just the guys that got hurt Sunday, but the guys who were out. I don't know what the status is of the linebackers, but the defense should be a whole lot better if they get them back. Is Morgan going to play? He didn't play much, did he?
He played about 16 snaps on Sunday. That was it. But that was what seemed to be ahead of schedule for him with the knee injury he was coming back from the preseason. So you got that, and Landry and Evans. We're still waiting to see them.
And I would imagine, you know, the special teams, while great on returns, have got to be better on coverage. One of the things the Texans did well that I was stunned is their third-year running back, Tyler Irvin, under new special teams coordinator Brad Seeley, actually gave them good field position. We haven't seen that here in years. Seeley's Bill O'Brien's third special teams coach. So this special teams could be very entertaining and play a key role Sunday. But to me, it all depends on Mariota.
Caller, John, when he's asking, and I've fielded this question a lot, that is it time to start looking for another quarterback? I sure hope they don't mean like now, like they think there's a quarterback to go get now. They just go to the quarterback store and buy a quarterback. I mean, I know people love the draft and free agency, but in week two of the NFL season that I've been waiting for a long, long time, I'm not interested in free agency or the draft. I'm interested in seeing the team they have put together and how it can perform.
We start with Bob on line four. Hey, Bob.
Hi, guys. Mr. McClain, I have a question for you. Actually, two.
Fire away, Bob.
Number one, what is your best guess when Carson Wentz will return?
I would say the fourth week of the season.
Okay, against the Titans. All right, now.
The reason I say that is when you come back from an ACL, you don't just get cleared for contact and play immediately, I don't think. So whenever he's cleared for contact, I'm just guessing it's be two games.
Okay. Now, next question, if you'll answer it, I don't know, you might not. If you were playing fantasy football this week, what quarterback would you choose on your team this week?
Well, don't I have you going to give me options?
You have all the options in the world.
Every quarterback is available, John. Who are you taking?
Well, I'll tell you this, I'm not taking Fitzmagic because I don't think that's going to happen two in a row. I'm going to take Drew Brees because he had a great game. Now they got to be really angry, get another home game, so I'm taking Brees against the Browns.
All right, John, tell us some week one takeaways, teams you're buying into right now, and teams that, you know what, you're not really believing what you saw.
Well, first of all, I'm not believing what I saw in Tampa Bay putting up 48 points in the Superdome against a team a lot of people picked to go to the Super Bowl. I did not. I picked the Rams and the Patriots, but I'm not buying into them. I am buying into the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes and that tremendous speed they have and the incredible speed of Tyreek Hill. Now, that's for regular season. You know, nobody's going to buy into the Chiefs in postseason. And one I'm not buying into is Washington going in and winning by 24-6 at Arizona. That was the second worst debut of a new coach, Steve Wilks. I think people thought he would be a lot better. I don't buy that. And let's see, who else? Chargers, I said that I would never pick them to the playoffs, 16 road games. Did you see the pictures of the crowd? It was a sea of red. Chiefs red, and that's the story. And I feel sorry, big time sorry for those players. And there's one team in the NFL that has no receiver with a 700-yard season. Do y'all know who that is?
No.
New England. But as long as Tom Brady and the Gronk are there, they're still going to be one of the best. I also think Pittsburgh is better than to go in and commit all those turnovers. T.J. Watt, four sacks, blocked field goal to preserve the tie. You know they don't like it. And I'd like to think the Cowboy offense is going to be better than scoring 8 points.
Yeah, there's a reckoning in Dallas after a start like that where people were anticipating some improvement. Greg Olsen now out indefinitely. He refractured the foot.
Yeah, ankle injury, right?
Foot fracture.
Oh.
No surgery, but he's out for a long time.
Well, he may ultimately need surgery. They're going to try to rehab it for now.
Johnny is next up. Hey, Johnny.
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
That's good. I just had a question in regards to the week one game for the Titans and Dolphins.
Go ahead.
It's in regards to the Derrick Henry play where he ran for 65 yards and there was a terrible call by the referees. My question is, will there ever be a policy in which the NFL allows coaches to use one of their challenges to challenge a bad call by a referee?
It's interesting. Bill O'Brien talked last week, and he's in the Bill Belichick school. They'd like to have everything reviewable. Now, you're not going to, you would be limited on how many challenges you have, like you have now, but you could review anything. And if you thought up in the booth that that was a terrible call, you throw the flag, got a chance to be reversed because it was a bad call. And I kind of like that because there's a lot of touchdowns wiped out, and a lot of them are on bad calls.
John, just to turn it back to defense briefly, J.J. Watt had 5.5 sacks his rookie season. He then jumped up to 20 sacks in his second year. His brother, T.J. Watt, had 7 sacks last year. He had 4 sacks last week. I wonder what's on par, what's on tap for him in year number two.
They're using him in a different way. I think he is strictly a weak side pass rusher now, letting him come off the edge, which they should have done to begin with to take advantage of his speed and athleticism. Plus, like his brother, he was a former tight end who was just learning to play defensive, his case, linebacker. J.J. was learning to – he came out a year early from Wisconsin after transferring from Central Michigan, where he was a walk-on tight end. And T.J. was a tight end as well who made the move to defense. So I think it took them a year to get their act together.
Let's go to Ricky next up. What's up, Ricky?
Hey, good afternoon. Just real quickly, I want to get a shameless plug in. I work at Good Pasture Christian School. We play the 50th time, second longest running high school rivalry in the state of Tennessee versus Lipscomb this Friday night. I want to invite all the high school folks who like to follow good football to come out and celebrate it with former players, former coaches from both teams. But I hope y'all can help us get that word out this week.
You just did that. Great
did you
job.
Have, did you have a question for John?
Congratulations. Good luck.
I do. Yeah, go ahead.
I do. As you look at Deshaun Watson and look at Marcus Mariota, I'd like for John to look in his crystal ball and share with us who's going to fare better if Marcus is able to play this week and who has the longer NFL career. Thank you, and I'll listen.
Well, but Watson was hurt last year. Mariota's been hurt since, off and on since he's been in the league. It's amazing when you see guys like Eli Manning and Phillip Rivers who've avoided injuries their entire career. Brady and Breeze have had one injury. I think right now Watson's more talented, but a lot of it depends on coaching staff, system. You know, do they keep, as Paul was saying earlier, a lot of former quarterbacks were able to keep their coordinators because people didn't think of them as head coaches. Now look at Tom Moore in Indy with Peyton Manning. Nobody ever thought of him as a head coach. Matt LaFleur, people, you know, he wants to call plays. He wants to be head coach. If they're good and he stays there 2 years and Mariota stays healthy, Matt LaFleur will have a chance to be a head coach. So Mariota was better 2 years ago. Well, I kick it back. Watson was pretty darn good last year, and when the Titans got the best of him, when he put 57 on him. So that's something I can't really answer. But Watson has got a chance to be special, but he's got to be a whole lot better in this game than he was in New England.
And look, both of them are not always going to be in the pocket. We saw Mariota just get hurt already on a RPO. Watson suffered a big injury last year. I think the answer to the question ultimately might come down to which one's manages to be on the field the most.
I hate those RPOs.
Yeah, they're all the rage until you see something that happened. Did you see the Marcus play? Because I read the rule pretty specifically. Hayes clearly knew he didn't have the ball. The play had advanced to Derrick Henry being with the ball in the line of scrimmage. I hate to listen to Titans fans always bemoan how their guy didn't get the call and everybody else would. But if that's Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, there's definitely a flag, don't you think?
There's a flag, and they're changing the rule.
Yeah.
John, thank you as always, and we will catch up with you to preview Week 2 and Titans and Texans on Friday.
I look forward to it, and of course I look forward to coming to Nashville, my home away from home.
Yeah, we see you're not coming as early as usual, ditching Nashville.
I gotta work.
excuses.
See you, John.
See you, guys.
John McClain with us.
He runs the paper. He decides if he works or not.
He really does.
I mean, what's Aaron Wilson doing down there at the Chronicle?
Probably traveling to Nashville on Thursday.
Yeah.
Now, Paul, the reason why the hit on Mariota is deemed legal by the official is because he's a runner at that point, not a quarterback. So if you have these star quarterbacks carry out a fake like this and you hit them, then there'll be a major issue with Vrabel. You can't go low on a QB if he's the passer.
Right. But you can hit him if he is carrying out a fake like that, if he's acting like a runner. The thing is, though, that the rule says it's unnecessary roughness for unnecessarily running, diving into, cutting, or throwing the body against or on a player who, one, is out of the play. I think you could argue he was out of the play. Or two, should not have reasonably anticipated such contact by an opponent before or after the ball is dead. I think both of those apply, don't you? I think he shouldn't have reasonably expected contact, and I think he's out of the play. It's about a 3-step lead time. I think you should probably get the 1.5-step lead time that you get in some other circumstances.